So it's my pleasure to be here, and thank you very much for inviting me. I have a very short amount of time to talk about a very large project. I'll try to give a very quick overview of the Human Brain Project. Hopefully the slides will come up. Shall I encourage them? Okay, there we go. So one of the fascinating things about the human brain is that it's basically 3 pounds or 1.5 kilos of matter that actually generates our entire reality. So each one of us has a supercomputer that is capable of generating an entire universe. And at the same time, you know, with the billions of these around the world, that's generating our society, our culture. At the same time, it only takes a banana a day to power this supercomputer. So this is the most powerful technology we know of on the planet. We don't understand it. We've got to learn how it works, and how does it do it at such low power? Of course, when things go wrong with it, we also don't really understand what's going on. We don't really know how to define diseases. We don't really know how to treat many diseases. There are many of them. The treatments that we have found don't work in over half of the population. And we also have major challenges in basic sciences with biomedical research results, major high-impact results, not being readily reproducible across many labs. So there are a lot of challenges in current science. But there is a tremendous amount of very good quality data being produced around the world. And the question is what do we do with that? How do we make sense of that? How do we start to look across data that's being generated across all different levels of organization in the brain, from the subcellular level, cellular level, tissue, whole brain level? How do we put that together? How do we learn how to bridge across these different levels to manage the complexity, to understand the principles that ultimately give rise to our realities, to who we are, to our society? And it's in the context of the Human Brain Project that we're really proposing an approach to bringing together that data. So there are three branches here in neuroscience. One is to unify our understanding of the human brain. That really means bringing together data from around the world, integrating it, building models, and running simulations. It doesn't mean we're going to simulate the whole brain in perfect detail, but what it means is we're going to use simulation as a tool to better understand the brain. In medicine, we can use the large amounts of data that already exist to better define and diagnose brain diseases and disorders. And we ought to be able to learn something from this computing device about how to better build supercomputers of the future, brain-like technologies of the future. How can we learn what the principles of how the brain is able to generate reality, recognize objects, work so quickly at such low power? This is a key point to come away with. Often the Human Brain Project is talked about as a human, as a brain mapping project. It's really not primarily about data generation. There is some data generation in there, and that's very important. There's strategic data being generated, but it's primarily about data integration. How do we bring together the data, put it together, and use that as a tool to accelerate our understanding of the brain? So that's where brain modeling and simulation is really at the core of the project. We want to be able to take data being generated in the top labs, literature, the knowledge that's been published in the literature, and existing models, and be able to build new models that we can test, run simulations of on supercomputers, and evaluate and compare how well do those models help us to predict other behavior that we didn't use to build the models. How do we validate those models and use that iterative cycle, that virtuous cycle of continually refining the models? They're not going to be all perfect and complete and right, but they will serve as a tool where we can see how the pieces can fit together. course, you can't just take a bunch of data from lots of different labs and throw it into a supercomputer and hope that it makes sense and hope that it just works. So you need theory. You need mathematical theory. You need theory that helps you bridge across scales. You need top-down theories about the overall cognitive architecture, the high-level organization of the brain, as well as ideas about how do you link data across scales from the bottom up. So theory is a major part of the Human Brain Project. There's an Institute for Theoretical Neuroscience in Paris. And cognitive architectures are also an important part of this. That, again, the high-level view, what's the systems-level organization of the brain? And there's a special issue of Neuron that just came out from participants in the Human Brain Project. And all the issues are there. It's a free issue. I encourage you to read it. But at the core, what we're building is we're building a new infrastructure, an informatics infrastructure, and an open science infrastructure. Neuroinformatics, brain simulation, high-performance computing, medical informatics, neuromorphic computing, and neurorobotics. And I'll take you very quickly through some of the pieces of that. I don't have time to go through all of them in detail. But a key part of the neuroinformatics is to organize the data into brain atlases, so multi-scale, multimodal atlases that help us just be able to find data, find relationships between data, have a common coordinate space, and have a common semantic framework for labeling these data so that we can find relationships between them. In medical informatics, it's really about building a system that can tap into existing clinical data, blood tests and biomarkers and genetics and brain imaging in the clinics without sacrificing privacy, because you're basically doing it behind the firewall and you're only doing aggregate level analysis. So you're pulling out aggregate level analyses to develop biological signatures of disease. And this is led by Richard Frykowiak, where they're looking at how can you use data to actually define the different phenotypes of disease, whereas we know a population with epilepsy or with Alzheimer's or depression. These are not homogeneous populations, and we want to find the data that can help define the subpopulations. The brain simulation platform is really about providing a new tool to neuroscientists to be able to build models from data, from theory, run simulations, and ask new questions, using that as a tool to prioritize what's the most important new experiment I should run? What's the most informative new piece of data that I should measure? How can I test a hypothesis before I go into the lab and then use what I learned from that to better inform the way I design my experiment? And the proof of concept that led to the Human Brain Project was the Blue Brain Project, and this was built off of many years, about 20 years of data gathered in Henry Markram's lab, characterizing a single neocortical microcircuit. So from rat somatosensory cortex, and really going through and characterizing many, many different levels of detail, the individual neurons, where they form synapses between each other, the electrophysiology of them, how they fire, the synaptic context, the gene expression, the statistics of all the different cell types, and how they occur within the circuit. And the Blue Brain Project was about testing the hypothesis, can you take data, measurements from a lab, and put them together in a data-driven way to build a model, and do the parts add up to more than just the sum of the parts? So if you put them all together, does it give rise to something more than just what you put together? These are the parts, some of the parts. The neurons, so we have thousands of reconstructions of neurons from this circuit, excitatory and inhibitory cells, a whole diversity, 55 morphological types. And we put them together into a neocortical circuit, a model circuit, as what we call a digital reconstruction of that circuit by placing these neurons within the three-dimensional volume, and that creates a potential circuit, because everywhere that an axon comes close to a dendrite within this circuit, that's where synapses can potentially form, but we know it's only in a subset of those locations where they form. So we learned the principles that allow us to identify where are the actual functional synapses forming using biological constraints, and that by that way we build up a virtual circuit of 31,000 neurons within a volume that's about a third of a cubic micron. We've modeled the electrical behavior of individual neurons. So we use data-driven approaches to capture the firing properties of the neurons, as well as the electrical activity that's happening within these arbors, these dendrites, and that affects the way the input is modulated and integrated. And then when we put all of this together, using the rules of different types of synapses that couple the circuits, we actually see an emergent behavior that comes out of this that is actually a low-frequency oscillation. So this is when we've changed the extracellular potassium potential, so we depolarize all of the cells. And what happens is spontaneously this circuit generates this low-frequency rhythm. Well, that's a very classic rhythm that you see in coma or in sleep and in isolated slices of cortex. And so it's already, in a very basic way, reproducing some of these low frequencies. But it's not all correct, and it's got its issues. But so we continue refining, continue measuring, using this as a basis. We build a virtual slice, so we can mimic slice experiments in vitro, and use that as the basis of stimulation experiments. So we simulate thalamocortical input and see the propagation patterns here. We also built tools to calculate the extracellular potential from individual neurons, so we can see the field that's generated by the electrical activity in each neuron, and we can also simulate electrode interfaces to these neurons. So how do they actually, if you inject a current into the extracellular space, how does that stimulate an individual neuron or different classes of fibers? And then this becomes a tool to actually interpret EEG signals, because we can take a local field potential or a high-level signal that you get by sticking a wire in the brain, and we can interpret that. This is what it sounds like. And we can relate that top-level signal that you're getting from the electrode to the activity of individual neurons and synapses. And that's something that we haven't had a tool to do directly before. We've also learned how biophysical parameters, extracellular calcium, changes the computational state of the circuit. And so you get, in one case, with high calcium levels, you get these propagating waves of activity, whereas if you change the calcium to a more in vivo wakefulness-like level, you actually get much more direct proportional responses. The computation of the circuit dynamically reconfigures based on the biophysical conditions and neuromodulation. And so what the key message to come away with is that it is possible to take data from the lab, build a model, and we did not tune the model to reproduce those network level phenomena. Those emerged from putting together the measurements of the pieces. So the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, and we can do it in a data-driven way. So this is published in Cell. I encourage you to see this. This was a team science project, so 82 authors on this paper, and we're making the model fully available for download from the website. We're working on adding glia and vasculature to this, and integrating now, working towards whole brain scale models where we can use whole brain levels of cell densities and gene expression to identify distributions of cell types and connectivity maps to layer in connectivity to get the first draft of a whole brain rodent model. And one of our partners is actually producing whole brain projectomes of individual neurons. So now you can see that an individual pyramidal cell has an axon that goes throughout the entire extent of the brain, and we can get that digitized and use it in the models. High-performance computing is a key part of this. We've got a team building, procuring, defining the supercomputing necessary to run these simulations. To be able to run a simulation, it doesn't mean we'll have a simulation at the human scale but in full detail, but we want the capability of running things at that scale, and we'll have an exascale supercomputer by 2023 to be able to run full-scale simulations at the cellular level. The neurocomputing platform is there to take simplified models and run them in hardware at real time or low power. And then finally, the neurorobotics platform is about making sure that we have sensory stimulus to go into these simulations and motor output and virtual environments where they connect, because the simulations are not at real time and they work in a virtual environment. So just to conclude, I want to kind of point out the first big global data integration project started about 8,000 years ago, collecting maps from the first explorers around the world, putting them into a common globe so that you could start to see how do these things fit together? What is the world? What does it look like? And we really see this as just a step in that process for the brain. We want to be able to put together the pieces and just get a picture of the elements of the brain. Now, of course, for the Earth, this is still ongoing. And we're getting now sophisticated computer models and monitoring from space and high resolution, and this now we can predict pollution paths and weather and climate. But for the brain, it's going to take a lot of work from around the world. This paper recently came out in Science from a workshop in Suzhou, China, and there we had representatives of the brain projects from around the world, and there was just broad consensus. No single group, no single country is going to understand the brain alone. We've got to do this together. It's got to be a global collaborative effort, and that's what this paper expresses. So thank you very much for your attention.